I learned the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, "Ain bin Adarishan la Adashaini or the Mikro Megillah Bilbat." So, Hayyoyis, that that's the case, I have a kasha on myself. How is it that we're up to the third share of Maisik Sofim and we didn't have an appeal yet? How could that be? It's the Mais or Rabbi Yisai. The Aniyim, even though it's Adarishan, they still need money. It's a Mela now. Is Nilmoy the Lulame Nishma Velasis of Akayim. From all the Nilmoy the Lulame, so we need a little also extra chizuk in the Lasis of Akayim to Vidaila Mavid. From Kotten. Yeah. I wanted to talk a little bit about some issues that we didn't come up to discuss last time that are very, very relevant issues. Very relevant issues. One is, let's start with what's a very common mistake. Varied reasons, whatever the reason is, the simplest reason is really the reason that we'll give us the Chidah's reason. But even the Achronim that didn't subscribe to the Chidah also took the same stance. The Shas relates that a Mafan is vulnerable to Venosa of someone who supports their children after the age of six. So he's nice in stock and b'chaleis. He's involved in stock all the time. So there are those that wanted to draw an implication from that, that any support that I give to my children above the age of six, it's stoker. So that's it. So I fulfilled it in a maisa, just by supporting my family. Now, the simplest reason this is not true is the Chidah. It's a Tshuvas Chidah. The Chidah wrote, and this is an awful long time ago, we're talking centuries back when the Chidah wrote this, that there are normal expectations which people have when they enter marriage. And those normal expectations, he says, are together, they're considered tnoi ksuba. Tnoi and conditions of the ksuba. He says, in his time already, if one married a woman, it was self-understood that he would support those children until they reached whatever the age of emancipation was in that society, until they were expected to go off on their own in the world. It changes from society to society. But until such time that they were expected to go off on the world on their own, it was understood if you married a woman, you would have children with her, that that's a responsibility that you take. So the Chidah says, within Tnoi Ksuva, you're obligated to do so. There's many, many relevant dinim that are associated with this. It's relevant to support. In a case, let's say there's a divorce. What's the obligation of the father to support? Also very relevant. That's stuff. It's chiv, the Chidah tells us. And if the Chidah wrote it in his time, it's alachas kamo v'kamo in today's world. If he stood under the chuppah, anyone, and he told the girl, listen, if we have children after the age of six, I'm not supporting them, she'd spit at you and leave. Without any doubt. So, there's no question in today's world that it's within Tnoi Ksuva. That the Chidah, what the Chidah wrote in the Tshuva, if it was true in his time, it's true 100 times over in today's world. And even without that Cheshmin, the Achronim were not happy. They did not feel that the implication of this Chazal was that one should place his children in effect his public charges. This Moment Stoker is not my personal funds, it's public funds. The only difference is that here I am the fiduciary. I have the authority to dispense the funds. I'm responsible for them. So that's true. But then it's not my money. It's public funds. It's stocker money. So to give you an example of what it means for something, it's stocker money. I'll give you an example. I discussed a shaila which had to do with Shiluach HaKam with Rabbi Yoshev Shlita. And one of the halachas in Shiluach HaKam is that prat l'kiyikore kan tzipor prat l'mezumah. If you own the birds, you can't do the mitzvah of Shiluach HaKam. They have to be hefkedik birds. Birds that are not owned. The problem is, if the birds come and they build a nest on my property, so my property is kind of the hefker, so I can't be yitzir mitzvah. So people are mechadish, rightly so, that if they make a declaration that they don't want their property to acquire the birds for them, it doesn't. It's not a kinyan bal kocho. So the question is, in a yeshiva, they did the same thing. They declared that the minyan, in this regard, should not serve to make a kinyan. They will mafker all the birds. So I started to discuss the mitzvah of Shiluach HaKan in this setting with Rabbi Yoshua. So the first thing he did, before he would even talk about the mitzvah of Shiluach HaKan, is he first wanted the mitzvah of Tztoka. And he wanted to consider if the Rosh Yeshiva of a yeshiva had the right to undertake such a thing. And he said the Rosh Yeshiva is only a Dabbat Tztoka. He can't do what he wants with the money. The money was given to him for one particular purpose, and that's to take care of his Talmidim. So anything which fosters the care of his Talmidim, that's what he was given the money for. If he uses the money in any other way, it's totally unauthorized. He has no right to do it. So first he considered if there could be any which what way that this could have a negative impact on the Talmidim. Only after looking at it, turning it over and over, and deciding that there was no way that it would impact negatively on the Talmidim, so now the Rosh Yeshiva is authorized to make that decision, now we can talk about the mitzvah of Shiluach HaKan. But just to give them a notion of what it means that when we have moment stuff, we're a gabbai tztoka. That's all we are. It's not our money. So the Achronim in effect is saying that even if Chazal said one is mekayim tztoka with his own children, if he didn't have the responsibility, it doesn't mean that we're supposed to take public funds and support them. That was not, the Achronim said, was the intention of that Chazal. And Allah is kama v'kama in light of the chidah. So this is a very relevant factor. Let's turn our attention in a slightly different direction, and that is that money one acquires, I think, principally in three ways, basically. Either you earn it, you're fortunate enough that someone gives it to you as a gift, or you inherit it. So basically the three ways that you come by money in this world. And so we've talked about earning money, we've talked about receiving a matana. Now what happens if I inherit money? What's the din? So the halacha is, an inheritance is mechuyev in maisa. But there's a very big difference in what the nature of that inheritance is. Is the inheritance a liquid asset? It's cash? Something negotiable? Then I'm supposed to maisa it right away, I guess. If it's non-liquid, let's say inherit real estate. So the halacha, the Shulchan Aruch, is more liberal than the IRS. In the IRS's world, if you inherit it, I inherited a building for $20 million. It's very nice. But I don't have $2 million to my name to pay the taxes or whatever I'd have to pay on that $20 million building. Chav Mr. Geld. They don't care. You don't have the money, so liquidate it and pay the tax. That's the stance of the IRS, of the tax law. The halacha does not take the same stance in terms of maaser. The halacha says, it's brought from very, very early Achronim, that in a non-liquid asset, I do not have to maaser it until I liquidate it. So if I inherited a building, you know, my grandfather owned the Empire State Building and I inherited it, so far be it from me to have the money to pay the taxes in that building. But I'm not mechuyev to give the maisa in that building until I liquidate it. So I don't have to worry that I all of a sudden have to come up with $30-40 million, whatever it may be, $25 million to pay for the building. Not my headache. Whatever the price of the building may be. So this is a very, very important distinction. The distinction between liquid and non-liquid assets by Yerusha. Very, very important. I would think that the following. I would think a stock is a liquid asset, and a bond is not a liquid asset. What?
You also have to sell a stock also.
Yeah, but in other words, I think that's a different story. I don't think we could consider... So a stock is different than a building for a very simple reason. I can't take 10 floors of the Empire State Building and sell them. That's not there. So that's the problem. The problem with real estate is, if I want the real estate or I need the real estate, or I'm going to keep it for business, I can't sell part of it.
What if somebody was there and 10 buildings?
So good. It still doesn't mean on each and any particular building. I'm not mechuyev. Good. I'm not mechuyev to sell off a building which is right now. I may want to buy. I'm only mechuyev in that asset, 10% of that building. That's a far, it would seem to me quite different than a situation when I inherited 1,000 shares of stock. A bond is obviously different. I don't think until the maturity date there would be an obligation to miser stock. I mean a bond. I don't think so. You know, because a bond is essentially is a non-liquid asset. So I don't believe that you'd have a hischaivus to do such a thing. You know. And again, you can't exactly sell 10% of the bond to any particular bond that you have. So you would wait until it's time of maturity.
Okay. Yeah. First of all, you might be able to send 10,000.
No, we're talking.
You may be able to send one bond.
No, that's a different story that I don't know that I'm obligated to do. Necessarily. That may be, because I could argue that I could look at each bond as a separate investment. And I'm mechuyev to collectively. Yeah, yes.
Why stock? Each share
of stock? A stock is a certain amount of money. It has a negotiable value. It's negotiable right now. I don't, you know, it would seem to me, my estimation is that a stock is different than a bond in that regard, different than a building. Stock is made to be bought and sold, that's what it is. You hold it a certain time, etc. It's not, and therefore, I have a block of 1,000 shares. You know, you could argue, let's say I had 10 different types of shares in the same company, maybe that's different. And I'm clear to set off one against the other, that could be. But within each particular type of share on a negotiable instrument, it would seem to me that is the halach of cash. I do not see that as being different. Now, what we spend maisa money for, there's a lot of things that we spend maisa money for. Now, first and foremost, so if we didn't undertake it fully mitzar adin, but only to be mekayim the minhag and bli neder. So as I mentioned previously from Shlomo Zalman Orbach, that we have the ability to be somewhat more liberal. Meaning that we can use it for a broader range of tzedakah purposes. But the baseline is that as a minimum, 50% of the ma'aser should definitely go for causes of aniyim. Aniyim or achzaka satar. You know, Zorka Satara is in effect, listen, the people learning don't have the ability and the means to pay for the yeshiva. So even whatever, the families contribute to some extent, but yeshivas in all of history haven't existed just merely on the stipends paid by what parents pay. I mean, the yeshiva is a communal organization, and it exists because we collectively bear the burden of it. So that also together would fit into Hachzokas Aniyim in that regard. Yes?
Does
Kiruv work
within the parameters of supporting
Torah? Is Kiruv work in the parameters of supporting Torah? That's a very, very good question. A very, very good question. Let's come back to that afterwards, because there's probably a lot of different sizes, there's probably a lot of different types of Kiruv that we're talking about. Yeah?
What's the basis? What's the source of the 50%?
That the Achronim felt, in other words, even if we're going to eat, in other words, their feeling was that at least machzah we should use for the ultimate purpose for which it was intended. You know, the kula should not spread, you know, that's the gvul that they gave, that we shouldn't, you know, go beyond that. Now, we have a lot of different things that we tend to use ma'aser money for. We have situations, for example, I come to shul, and I want to buy an aliyah. That is a fact that I get a certain covet for it, that's true. But one who distributes tzedakah is allowed to receive covet for the tzedakah that he gave. He's obviously in a higher madrega if he doesn't take the covet. But as I often say, Chazal state, Ruach HaKadosh Baruch Hu Shet Tzadikim Uotim. The Rabbeinu Shalom saw that super tzadikim are few and far between. So the world was not set up to work in a fashion which should work for tzaddikim and not for everybody else. And that's why the Rashba writes, is very vociferous about this, and the tshuva is both lahaloch and the shulchan aruch, that b'farsim and oisei mitzvah. If a person gives money for tzedakah, we're very quick, in fact, to give public credit to him. Why? Because this encourages other people to give money to tzedakah. And that's really, someone asked me, but we have a principle of Atznei Alecha Sim Hashem Alokecha. So, and I said, because of that, I was mayan carefully into the Tshubas HaRashba and the sources. And basically, what comes out is the following. To the extent that my giving will not set an example for others, it should be out of the public eye. But to the extent that there's some type of public campaign, and my involvement in it will encourage and set an example for others, then that's part of my obligation, is not only to give the tzedakah, but to set the public example. Someone once came to ask me a very interesting question. And that is, he buys an aliyah, Yom Haron, at his shul. And he gives money, you know, as a mishaberach to. So he wanted to know, I should help me figure out how much money he should give in the mishaberach. What was the shayla? The shayla is, he'd give far more money to the shul than whatever he had to put into the mishaberach. But he wasn't interested in having everyone know, you know, give him credit and covet for how much money he gave. It wasn't important. On his scale, he preferred not to. But he was also sensitive for him to go up and not make a mishaberach. So he's setting a poor example with a shul, because he's a well-heeled fellow. So he wanted to know, I should help him figure out how much money he should give in the public mishaberach to set a good example for the others, and the rest whatever give under the table that others don't have to know about. And that's a person that's very keenly, a keen awareness of all the responsibilities that come with tzedakah. There's the support of the institution. There's the example that we set for others of how to give tzedakah.
I see the list of shuls in particular. I'm just an aliyah, but would that give me a shul membership or a building fund or
now, we mentioned last time in the Halacha and the Shulchan Aruch that the support of a shul, the basic support of a shul, is one of the things that you're supposed to use tzedakah money for. The question is, what priority? The Shulchan Aruch placed it as the second highest priority, and the Gra put it down a couple of rungs. After Achzakas Torah and helping people that do not have proper medical care, so, and after Aniyim, in effect, regular aniyim, so the Gra placed it a couple of rungs lower. But it's certainly to the extent what's necessary to support the shul in all its ways is part of Maisa. That's the fact that we... So let's go back to the aliyah, because that defines certain of the principles. So if I have tzedakah money, for example, I could give the tzedakah money to an institution, and let that institution will do me certain favors because I gave them the money. So that's 100% legitimate. As I say, it may not be the highest my regular Shem Shemayim, but it's 100% legitimate. We call it Toivas Hanor, meaning the appreciation, the reward that I may get for directing stock of money in your direction, I have a right to get. So now the question is, so a person received an aliyah, so that may be considered in that regard, is he got back a certain Toivas Hanor. But the question is, how much is actually stock of? And the Achrayim, I did see it, in fact, even in a Sefer Rabbi, in a Tshuvas of Rabbi Gevayger. Very interesting. How much money is tzedakah? He says, the tzedakah shabo, what I should take off Meiser, is only by how much I outbid the next fellow. So let's say I pay $200 for an aliyah. And he was willing to pay $150. So that means tzedakah already had $150 without me. So I don't have a right to take off the first 150 from tzedakah, because they didn't need me paying 200. They had 150 in their pocket without me. So therefore, all I have a right to take off is the extra 50 that I gave that they wouldn't have had without me. The rest, in other words, basically is my personal chesed. I wanted an aliyah, whatever it is. But I can't say that with tzedakah. Tzedakah didn't benefit $200 because of me. Tzedakah benefit $50 because of me.
Yeah, but nobody else actually paid.
That's true, but that is a very, very insignificant point. How much benefit did Stocker get from it? Because of me. Rav Moshe used this principle. I'll give you another example where he used this. Same notion. Should I use Stocker money to buy a raffle ticket? Raffle for Stocker. Can I use Meister money for it? So Rav Moshe made the very, always ever perceptive, made a very simple chiddush. He said, if it's a ticket, if it's a raffle with a closed number of tickets, and it's a type of raffle where in all likelihood they're going to sell it out, So he says, then I have no right to use my simony for it. Because there are people that have vied for it and mourn it, etc. And whatever, without my using my simony. If it's an open-ended raffle, you know, they'll sell as many tickets as they can. Or it's the type of raffle where they're never going to sell all the tickets that they made, so then I can use Meiser money for it. But for Meiser, I have to see that there's a tangible benefit in Stockholm that I would not have had if I didn't use those funds. But if I win the raffle, okay, we're coming to that. So if you win the raffle, so basically you now, let's say, made a good business deal, right? You put down 10 and you got back 1,000. So you made yourself $990 profit.
Avada.
It's no different. Listen, what happens if you go to the track and you put down money, $10, and you get back 1,000? And the IRS wants tax on $990. So that's no different. The halacha is no different in that regard. So always to define what is the tangible benefit in Stockholm. Somebody asked me a shayla, which I'm not 100% comfortable yet with, but I will share you with you. But first, let's start with the shayla which precedes that. There was, in previous centuries, a thought that a person could buy sforim with the meiser money and write in the sefer that it was bought with Moe's Meiser, and use them to lend to others as a lending library for other people. He would own them personally, but he would lend them out regularly to other people. There was some that allowed this. Torah Hoshek was not so happy about it, others were not so keen. So part of the consideration of that was, without doubt, Sforim were very hard to come by. Very, very hard to come by. And therefore, if you didn't have someone dedicate money to buying sforim, you could have a city where you just could not even get basic sforim. They were expensive and they weren't printed too often. They were hard for publishers to print, hard for authors to put out. We can't even begin to imagine what it means. They asked the Chazon Ish, the Chatzadik Livracha, and a Shaila, I believe in the Chelek Eben Ezra, in Hilchos Kedushin. So he left a certain thing as Tzorachim. He's not sure what the din is. So someone came to him and he asked him, how did he have a Shaila? It's a Mufurish Rishalmi in Kedushin, that this and this and this. So he agreed that the Rishalmi Mufurish settles his question. He said, but did you read what I wrote in a parenthesis at the beginning of the Siman? I wrote that this Siman was not done with the full Ian with which it should have been done. He says, part of the problem was, he says, I was in a town. He says, I don't believe there was a single Yerushalmi in the entire city. So I knew whatever, my Eon and this, you know, Simon was not, for varied reasons, whatever they were, including this one, was not to the nth degree. Now, could we imagine that? Can't even begin to imagine it. Could we imagine that Gedolei Achronim didn't own a Shas and would go to borrow Sforim to be able to learn? So in that context, there were those that felt that the purchase of Sforim and making them available for public use was also a public cause. And that was a debatable issue, if that was correct or not correct. To the largest extent, it would not seem in today's world to be a significant factor. Sforim, the easiest thing in the world today. For a few $100, you buy Bar Ilan. And that's it. In every tshuva sefer that you ever wanted, you don't even have, that's it, just punch in, I'll give you every tshuva that's in there. Who has to own Sforim anymore? So my Tommy didn't ask me, the only problem is, what are you going to do, Shabbos? I'll have to get a heter for a guy to take them out. That's all. So, the shaila that I had was the following. Someone wants to buy a sefer Torah, lend it to a shul. Can he use Moe's Meiser for it? So my inclination, I told him I don't have an absolute answer, but my inclination is that it depends. If the Sefer Torah is for a place that doesn't have a Sefer Torah without you, then you're fulfilling a public cause. Then you have to figure out exactly how much you know, since you still own the Sefer Torah, if you whatever had a cheshbon out how much meiser you could use for that. But if you're dealing in a situation where it's your place where they have Sefer Torah, you want the schus. It's a wonderful schus to have. But then it's really, I don't think a person should be in that context using most meiser for a Sefer Torah. You know, it's a different situation. So that really depends. That was my inclination, as I said. I did not give an absolute answer on the question. But it seemed to parallel to me the case of the Sforim. That the Sforim themselves was somewhat of a question. And I could only see the Tzad Lahokel if it was on the basis where Sforim were necessary. If one donated it to the shul, right, or the shul, let's even if they had one, the shul felt they needed another Sefer Torah, it can function better, etc. For the first minute, for the second minute, for a master Sefer, you donated it, that I could see as you met a public need. You meet a public need. But here, the situation is two things. There's really no, there may not be a public need, and the second issue is that the person himself retains ownership. Good, he's Mekayim a mitzvah, that's true. But that from the that would seem a little bit of, you know, it doesn't seem meiser, does not seem exactly to be the fit. Coming to Purim, today's Purim Katan, but we're coming to Purim. Purim has a lot to do with the mitzvah to talk about, Tonos Lev Yenim. The Gemara says in Megillah, Neyam Shalaniyam Yisrael, Neyam Shalaniyam, and the Suah is the Mikra Megillah. They're focused upon Mikra Megillah. They know that night is a night to come and collect and get what they need, the alms that they need. Now the question is, we have a klal in the halacha that when it comes to chiyuvim, obligations, I cannot pay obligations with Moos Meisim. So how, what part of Matonos Lev Yonim can I take off from Meisim? And the answer is very simple. What's the basic obligation? Matonos Lev Yonim. Right? So I have to give one Matona to each of two Aniyim. I'm kind of the mitzvah. What's the share of the Matona or varied? At max, and I guess we could afford the max nowadays, is at least that it should be able to give a person a small Suda's Purim. Now, a small Suda's Purim might be it's a hamburger and some french fries and a drink, a few, a couple of slices of pizza and a soda. That's at least it's a small meal.
Not together.
Oh.
If
you want it 9 o'clock in the morning, you want it 3 in the afternoon, you know. But some, just some examples. So good, so it's $5, it's $6, it's $10 today, whatever cheshbon you want to make. It's not more than that. So whatever one gives beyond the minimum, however you calculate the minimum, that's you can take off for most mice. That I don't have a chiyuv to do. The halacha, in fact, very strongly stressed that the emphasis ought to be on Matonos Lev Yonim, more than on Mishloach Manos. Because sof kosof, listen, friendship is very, very important. And we should not minimize it. Ava Shalom, bringing Shalom being between Adam and Chaveray is very, very significant. I was aware of a situation, there were two people that got involved in a rather rough battle. It was not a personal thing, it had to do with a public issue, but it was a rather rough battle. Kitzur Hadvarim, there was a lot of strain that entered into the relationship because of this tough fight. Is V'hoya Bayayimahu that the battle ended. No wars begin, wars end. They have a reason to end too in most situations. It ended. So one of the parties sent the other one a bottle of wine and Purim, just to let him know, listen, you know, whatever has happened between us before, no hard feelings. And it had a phenomenal effect. It brought about a renewed sense of yachas between the people. So we should not look away. Neighborliness and sending mishloach monos to our friends. I do not believe the halacha means that we should lessen the mishloach monos, but rather what it means is we should add to the matonos l'avyayim. But it doesn't have to mean. I don't mean to say we have to be outlandish with the mishloach monos. That's something else. But in a complex and stressful world, the personal touch goes a long way to smoothing out differences that may exist. But Matanas Lev Yainim is the essence, really, of what Purim is about. The carry, the Avas Yisrael. And therefore, what we give beyond the minimum, that certainly we have a right to take off a Moos Maisa. Yeah, obviously. Now, there is a question, if there is a view, let's put it that way, that holds that one may deduct personal expenses, household expenses, from Moos Maisa. There is such a view. But principally accepted lahalacha is this should not be relied upon except b'shas etchak, meaning that one just can't pay the bills otherwise. But other than that, it's not a course of action that we, not the way to go about it. And you see, there is a view which states that one's household expenses can be deducted before you give maisa. So that's, yes, so that is not a sheet that we should normally undertake to follow unless a person is in a situation that he just can't hack it otherwise. He can't cover his bills. But other than that, it's not the mahalach that a person should take. Whatever is necessary. Babysitting is necessary. Clothing is necessary. Commuting. All of those are real business expenses. There's different expenses that you have. The IRS may not recognize them in those cases, but they are very, very work-related.
That would be separate from household.
Right, that's a separate. Listen, I could stay home and have one or two outfits and it's fine. If I have to show up in public every day, it's a different way you have to go about things. Right? So for all of those things that you have that are being spent for the purpose of allowing me to engage in my business, those are business expenses. Okay, now do we have any questions until now on what we discussed? Yeah, or Rami. Yeah, if you donate a car, it most certainly is considered Maisa. But again, you have to have a judicious view of the value. You know, it's very easy. It's very easy to inflate the value. One has to have a judicious view of the value. Now, sometimes it's not so easy to gauge what is the personal benefit that we have from something that I'm gaining and what is the stock aspect of it. And we struggle as a society to define that too. Right? We had in the last years, the IRS has now asked that all the non-charitables put on a receipt how much money was donated and what tangible benefits were given in return. So we have the same problem in most Maisa. Go to a dinner. Cost $250, $360, $500, whatever the dinner costs. They get a couple of seats at the dinner. Yeah. obviously a significant portion of that is a donation to the tzedakah. That's what I went for. Now, how much can I deduct though from Maisa? Well, on the other hand, I have to ask myself a different question. Well, did I have to eat tonight? I wasn't planning to fast otherwise. You know, if it's my thing to fast, okay. So then maybe then I got very, very little value from them. You know, some people that like to fast. The Maisa with the bells of Rebbe. I think it'll be Socha Doiv, Zeh Hatzalik Livrocha. He liked to fast. And his father even, it drove his father a little bit up the wall, but there's nothing he could do. His father, his son was a very tzitzkistik Yid, and he liked to fast. So the halacha is that if one puts on one's tefillin, if the ritzua gets flipped around the other way, upside down, so one is yoytzei the mitzvah, Morris's rabbit happened to him, and he fasted, but he said he was a poshei on the mitzvah. He did not take enough care to be mekayim the mitzvah properly. That the bells are Rebbe, when he was, before he was Rebbe, he was in a shtetl, and this happened to him. And the Ritzuva got to, you know, was partially turned over. He finished davening, and he realized. So he went to the Rebbe, the shtetl, and he asked him to pass him for him what he's supposed to do, if he has to fast or not. So the Rebbe said to him, I'll tell you, he said, if anyone came to me and asked me what to do, Mara says he's supposed to fast, I would make them fast. He says, but if you ask me to shayla, he says, you enjoy fasting, he says. For you, he says, you have to eat for 2 days. That's your kapara. You know, so it depends. Now, the poor type, listen, I wouldn't bother to eat. So good, so how much benefit did I get? But I usually tell people, first of all, listen, I had to eat tonight anyhow, so that certainly is a tangible benefit. There's a second tangible benefit that's beyond that. I might eat, you know, the leftover chicken from Shabbos. That's true. How much would I give to have a nice roast beef meal Sunday night instead of the yesterday's chicken? Something, by and large, you know, if I'm the type, maybe I give another $5 a portion, right? Something I'd give most people, right? If you give me a fancy meal, I don't need a fancy meal, I wasn't looking for it, but if you gave it to me, at least at minimal cost, I would take it. I mean, I'd go and spend $60 a plate for it, that's true, but listen, $10 I might be willing to give for it. So what I would be willing to give, that's also a personal benefit. Beyond that is the tzedakah part. Yeah, go ahead.
If one sponsors a shal shoes or one sponsors a kiddush, you know, in the case of a shal shoes, the shul will happen every week. So here you're actually helping out the shul because you're not paying the shul. But whereas a kiddush, they only have one if someone is sponsored.
Yeah.
Is there any difference in the two?
I mean, even in a Shalash Shuddis, what could you say? To be Yaitse Shalash Shuddis, you need one Vilkala and a little seltzer. What do you need? You know, how much are you going to take off of that? 75 cents?
No. But what I'm saying is that the shul will provide the same Shalash Shuddis. Let me say, we can provide Shalash Shuddis.
But that's, listen, we want someone to donate it. Where do we provide it from? You know, it's not that we have a imon that the Shalash Shuddis Gabbai goes Friday afternoon, and whether somebody sponsored it or not, the chalas is sitting in the soda outside. It comes from the shul's funds. It comes from tzedakah.
So, by someone sponsored.
That he's giving to tzedakah. That's without any. They had a tangible benefit at Shalash Shuddis is very minimal, the tangible benefit. They said, well, it's a chala, maybe pay a dollar. What would you know for actually what you got, whatever it is.
Right.
You know, it's, or less, 50 cents, whatever it might be.
What about a
kiddush
for the shul?
Okay, it's for the shul also. That's, it's a necessary function for a shul. The gaboyim and those that run a shul have a right to articulate that which they feel is necessary for the shul to function, the community to function properly. And that's within the parameters of what the shul's mission is. So you're supporting that, so that's fine. Now, sometimes people go, for example, either they get, let's say they get a gift from someone. A guy gets married. Good. So the matonos of the chasen, the cash he's supposed to give ma'isa for. Then he gets presents. You know, presents, all types of presents, and it varies by the person. For some people, some things are very useful. For other things, for them, are white elephants. Now, some things are in between. So something that I would want to buy, so it's a very tangible benefit to me that I got it. Something that I would never buy and I have little use for provides very little tangible benefit for me. There are things which we would say are marginal, meaning that I wouldn't pay the full value of it. It's not worth it to me. But if you gave it to me discounted, heavily discounted, I could use it, I'd buy it. So at least the heavily discounted price, what I would pay for it, at least that much value I receive. Yeah.
With the principle that you had mentioned in the previous year, the applicable here, that if you give it, to somebody with a particular purpose in mind, like a parent gives a child the money for a down payment for a house, you don't have to give my son because they give
it. Absolutely. Not only don't you have to give it, it's an Easter to give it. It's Mamashle Sigzel.
Perhaps by wedding, you know, I mean, maybe if it's a silver mezuzah, that would be the case. But if it was a girl that has a shower and somebody buys her a mixer, they didn't give you a mixer, so you should have to give my son.
Yeah, that's true. I think the usual distinction that I make is the following. Those things which are given by very close family members, so as particularly cash benefits, etc., they mean that you should have the benefit of that particular thing. Others really, they're not so close to you to have that concern. You know, they give you a gift, whatever you do with the gift, it's your business. You know, sometimes whatever, an uncle or a cousin is very close, you know, will give you a huge chasana present. Way out of proportion to what others would give. Why? Because he's close with you. He wants, you know, you to have what you need, etc. So he feels good about it. So there, when it's someone very close to you, particularly on a cash thing, they intend you to use to have, you know, your parent, a grandparent, etc., a brother, etc. They intend you to use the whole thing for yourself. Someone that's further away from you really does not have that concern in the same way. Whatever will be with it, will be with it. You know, it's more at your discretion. I mean, if your friends gave you cash, I mean, if you decide that you'd like to use it for something very frivolous, you wouldn't have much qualms about it. If your father gave you $10,000 so you could learn in kollel, and he found out you were spending the money frivolously, it'd break your head for you. And that's where the difference lies.
The strings are attached to the money.
Exactly. You know, the closer the person is to you, then the more strings come attached to it. When there are strings attached, then I'm not free to do what I want with it. So that's usually money that could be exempt from my sin.
About the dinner?
Yeah.
So the actual cost of the dinner is not relevant in computing how much the remainder over what the dinner actually cost the institution. It's really more your subjective.
It's more your subjective. Listen, you know, a well-heeled person, listen, so I can spend $120 for dinner tonight. Doesn't disturb me. If I necessarily want to do it, you know, in this context, I guess it's a different story.
Even those organizations, because the IRS sometimes has the organization...
As I said, the IRS has its cash, but it's a legitimate... I would think that the halacha has a slightly different type of way of computing it. I mean, the IRS needs a more objective standard. The difference between us and the IRS is a very simple thing. The Beditshava, or Levi Yitzchak, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, they came to Shul on the first night of Pesach, and he didn't want to stop Mar. So he said, okay, he sends the Gabra and a few others, he says, I want you to bring me a loaf of bread. That's it. I want you to find a Yibra, a loaf of bread, and buy me a loaf of bread. A Yibra Shishnetl, go scour the ditch until you find a Yibra, a loaf of bread, and buy it for me. I want it. You know, and Rebbe's, he only has kashas, but on the first night of Yontif, that's all. But the Rebbe wants a loaf of bread, you know. It had better leach factors to think of, you know, that the roof flipped out. But, you know, but I've seen them. They listen. The Rebbe wants. So they went, and they spent hours scouring the ditch, and they came back. And they said, Rebbe, my nephew, we cannot find a morsel of bread. Jewish B'ditch, it doesn't exist. So Rabbi Yitzchak went up before the Aron Kodesh and he said, Rebbeinu Shalom, let's take a look at this. He said, the Tsar has thousands and thousands of soldiers enforcing his tax laws. If you get caught with illicit tobacco, they'll send you to Siberia. And yet, there's not a train station in Ashtetl and Rosh that you can't buy illicit tobacco. You, Rabbeinu Shalom, don't have one policeman. And you just said in the Torah, "Lo yirah," you can't find one morsel of chametz. The IRS needs an objective standard. We're answerable before the Rabbeinu Shalom. Maybe we don't have to have, it does not have to have an objective answer. We can live with a subjective answer too. Now, were there any particular matters on the form that you'd wanted to ask about? This gives a good breakdown of different types of... I mean, 20 is sort of self-evident. Pensions in excess of amounts contributed from which Meisim was already given. So obviously, it's on the amount that I take out. When it's in excess of the amount that I put in, I become Mechuyev and Meisim at that point. Now, Social Security. Social Security is a tax that they take off the top. You know, I know what's going to happen when they change the law, if they change the law. That's a different problem. But as it's presently structured, then let me ask my opinion if I want to give Social Security or not. And the best description of the right is this is a giant Ponzi scheme. That's all it is. You know, it's not more or less. If you and I tried this, they'd put us away in the penitentiary. They'd put us away in the penitentiary for 10, 20 years. But the government is able to run this scam forever. You know, but it's not more than a giant Ponzi scam. And the problem is basically that the pyramid is not, the numbers are getting out of whack with the pyramid, and that's the problem. You know, the people on the top end are living too long, and there's too many people in the middle, and not enough at the bottom. So the scheme is starting, you know, to run out of steam. But basically, we could take it off. Initially, we don't have to give MISA from it, because it's like an income tax to take it off the top. But when I get Social Security benefits, that at that point, what I put in, I didn't give MISA on at the beginning. It's sort of like using, I use tax-free dollars in effect. So consequently, on the Social Security benefits itself, if a person has the panosa to be able to pay it at that point in his life, he has to give MISA on the benefits that he gets out from it. Yeah?
For services which a person pays for, let's say, for instance, a doctor, they see somebody who's running for free, or they're an electrician, they do work for the shul, or, you know, any type of service, or even if it's unskilled labor, they needed somebody to...
I think that a service that you render that has a value to it, which you do for its stock or for an oni because of that, that's legitimate. That's a legitimate use of Meisa. I would think so. I mean, what's the difference if it's a... Well, listen, I gave up whatever. I could have used the time to earn money, etc.
Is that only true if you had a doctor or somebody else? Yeah. Or maybe they saw the person because they didn't have any other patients booked, so they saw
him. You know. Well, you have to know. I don't know if the fact that he would have paid me if he had money and he didn't, if that's in and of itself a country. That, you know, we can leave open. If it was, I used time that I could have used for other things, that certainly is a contribution. More than that, we'll leave it an open question. Yeah, Ronnie.
You give to a non-Jewish charity, two standpoints. First of all, to the Catholic Meisah, if you give because you want to marry the Cancer Society. Secondly, if you're giving because you, for business purposes, that you're honoring someone who's a witness or a partner or something, could that come out of the top as opposed to just being
counted by? Let's start in reverse order. My inclination is, for example, let's say you have to contribute to some, whatever it may be, a secular charity, the United Way or whatever it may be, because some guy at the top of your company is being honored, and then you have to play the game. So I would think that probably comes up as a business expense more than as a stock expense. That's what I would think. I think that's the right place to take it on. That's my inclination. I'm not really sure, in the sense that 50% could be used for shor mitzvahs, in that sense, if I'm giving, then l'chayra, money that I had to give to a non-Jewish public, you know, a non-Jewish charity, should be able to come off to as ma'aser. I would think so. Why? Because in the sense that Chazal obligated us, Mefarnes HaMeni Yaakov HaMeni Yisrael, so it's at least... If it's not stoker, it's at least a mitzvah that I have to do. Or the mitzvah is Kiddush Hashem, whatever exactly how one quantifies that, or as the Rambam quantifies it, Toiv Hashem L'Kol V'Rach M'Vakol Maso, but there's some obligation to do it. So in that sense, it is this type of obligation, which is a financial, it's stoker type obligation. I wouldn't view it as a separate mitzvah. I'm not 100% sure. But my inclination is, again, in a minimal sense, that which we have to give. And the truth is, there's another thing, I think, that we shouldn't look away from. And we sometimes forget this, and we're not really correct. And that is that there is an aspect of tzedakah, directly an aspect of tzedakah, in dealing with a secular charity. In other words, for example, let's say a person gives to the American Cancer Society or something like that. There is an aspect of tzedakah in the sense that we also have a vested interest, you know, within as a community, that society should find a resolution of this problem. You know, we're also afflicted by it. So if we contribute to it, it contributes in a certain regard to the larger good. And sometimes we need to take that into account. I'm judicious in my consideration of this for only one reason. Well, we come to what we call, to use a word which I find somewhat pejorative and I don't like to use, but it nevertheless, you know, it serves a certain utility in this context. When I give to a parochial need, so the X amount of people that are going to give to it, right? When I give to what's perceived as a general secular need, so now I've just increased the number of people that are going to give it by an exponent of 50 or 60 times or more. So consequently, you know, I do not think that we should put as high on our agenda, for example, issues of drugs, etc., and issues of public health. Not that we shouldn't have them on our agenda, but they shouldn't be as high on our agenda as they ought to be in society's agenda, because we also have the responsibility of supporting particularly Jewish institutions, which society as a whole will not take the responsibility for. So simply, we have a small pool of people to take care of certain issues, whereas there's a very large pool of people to take care of other issues. So when it comes to the larger pool, since we have a more parochial aspect, which we have to particularly be concerned with, so obviously our greatest emphasis should be in that particular area. But I do not think that we should totally close our eyes to issues of general charitable causes which benefit society. Yes? I view that as a company that right now you didn't take it, you know. And look, that's a question really. How to? If you, there is a tzad to say that you could mice it up when you take it out. What?
The investment may go down.
If they put it in right now, they put it into an investment. I don't have really a view. So listen to
it.
You know, if it's invested still, an investment, you don't have to until you take it out. See, if they put it directly into an investment, I mean, I don't know that I'm a chuyif to lose to take the 10% penalty, etc., and take it out before I'm 59 and a half. That, lechora, I'm not a chuyif to do, take that measure of hefsid. So in that sense, it's really, it's non-liquid in that regard until you start to reach the point that you start taking it out. And then you should miser it. Let's do it. The Kirov question, listen, it certainly began there as Shor Mitzvah, it certainly is. As I say, Kirov is a very broad term. It means a lot of different things. When we can deal with Kirov, which has to do, for example, with supporting a yeshiva like Rosh Hashanah, which is clearly Achzokas HaTorah without any question, with a general agenda of the yeshiva, it means the context of Kirov, but its general agenda is to teach Torah. That's what it exists for. And this Kirov in a lot of other ways, which is not so necessarily teaching, you know, Torah-oriented in and of itself.
Jet.
It's, you know, Jet, they teach them Aleph Beis, etc., they teach it. You know, those type of things which have a teaching aspect to them, they're teaching and conveying Torah, whether it's Jet teaching Aleph Beis, or giving public shiurim for people, in that sense, that type of Kirov would certainly fit the mold. If it's outside that, it probably fits more in the general mode of Shor Mitzvahs, which are very, very significant mitzvahs, which may not exactly fit to the mold of Tzedakah in and of itself. But in the context of we're using the money for other mitzvahs, it's certainly one of the more choshev mitzvahs to use. The Zohar has a remarkable statement. With that, I'll end. The Zohar says that if we would appreciate the schus of being mekar of a person, if we could appreciate the schus that's involved in that, since the whole world would chase after the Rishon. It's an awesome statement. I see, if I have a good stock to invest in, right? And I'll chase after it, a good business opportunity, I'll chase it until I get it. It's a lot of money to be made. If we understood the schus of being the car of a person, the Zayas is we chase after the Rishon. I hope that we have illuminated to some extent the halachas of Maisa. The guide, I think we've touched a lot of issues here, but it breaks it down in a very usable fashion. And if there are details that anyone would like to discuss, I certainly, you know, I'm ready to do so. Good night, Rabbi Issa.
You said that intuition doesn't pay calculation.